Hello, learners, and welcome to Learn On Podcast, the science show by kids for kids. I'm your host, Jonsi, and I'm here today with a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
And my name is Brian O'Connor from the ECIT Alliance.
So, today I'm really excited to have you here, and I would love to talk with you a little bit more about digital health and your experiences in this field. So, first, how did you initially become interested in digital health, and what's your story there?
Well, it's probably about 10 years ago when I started to hear the words digital health, because when the internet was founded, what, 40 years ago or something now, it started to be used for lots of different things. It took a long, long time for the health sector to embrace the idea of digital health. And the health sector, by its nature, is difficult to change. It is full of silos. So what you've got is you've got a lot of persuasion to do to try to persuade people that this can actually bring better patient care, can reduce the onerous tasks, the boring tasks doctors and nurses have to do, and allow them more time to spend with the patient. So it's been quite a journey. It's taken me at least 10 years to get people to listen, I suppose.
So you used the word silo, and I was actually going to ask you about that a bit later. But since you brought it up, what is a silo? Can you tell us more about it in the context of healthcare, and why is it important to break them down?
Okay, well, best way to give you an example. One of the things we do is we bring together all the silos. Because when I started to try to do this, I found when I talked to, for example, hospital groups, whether it's in the US with big groups or whether it's the NHS, the health services in Europe, they think they are the world because they're huge. If you think of the NHS, it's 1.2 or 1.3 million people work there. So it's natural for them to assume that everything revolves around them. So think about them being in a concrete silo and they don't think they need anybody else to help them. But what they really need, and we have persuaded them, is this: they need to talk to research institutes, universities. So we have got 300 universities across the world in our organization. We then have industry from startups right through to major global companies and many other organizations. So the key was the only way to break it siloed down is to persuade the people in it that it's worth at least having a peek outside to see that the other people are not monsters, that they're worth talking to and might even be able to collaborate with you. So silos are huge organizations which of themselves are a city on their own, so to speak. And we need to break that down, otherwise you won't make progress.
Yeah, I think especially after reading about your work, I also started to become more aware of how dominated by silos the healthcare industry really is. And even just in conversations we've had with previous guests, we just published an episode that was really insightful about the role of collaboration in healthcare and advancing and making sure everyone's voices are included at the table. So it's really interesting to think about how, even though we kind of put these organizations on a pedestal and they have made important change, it's equally as beneficial to break outside of that box and really loop
Correct.
everyone to the conversation.
I agree. If you think about the silos, pharmaceutical companies are enormous. They make up a huge percentage of the whole revenue for the entire sector. But they themselves would admit that they are silos. If you had got a company employing 100,000 people producing life-saving and life-improving drugs, that is a really powerful mission. Leave profits aside. It is very important that you continue. The difficulty they have had, go back to digital health, is they were doing clinical trials which would take on average 10 years from the time of thought of a drug to getting it to market through the FDA. That all changed, of course, during COVID when they realized they could actually do that in a year instead of 10 years. But the breakthrough for them was the ability to use digital health networks and collaboration as a means to speed up the discovery process, the regulation process, by being able to go out to the clinical trials throughout the world and recruit people digitally to do trials rather than have to physically go and say, oh, good, we'll get 100 people here. You can now do digital trials across hundreds of thousands of people across, importantly, the globe, not just in a particular region or country.
Yeah, no, I think it's incredible how much digital health has changed the way that we interact with patients. And, you know, there's a lot of conversations about telemedicine and how we treat patients now, but even thinking about the future with clinical trials, it's really amazing to see that so many people can be reached from rural areas and just including more demographics that we never would have been able to do before. And so for a little bit more context about yourself, what does the European Connected Health Alliance do, and what is your role within this organization?
Right. Well, I founded the organization about 10, it's probably 11 years ago. And like all startups, you sort of have an idea and you're going to change the world. And then you hit reality and you realize it's not just as easy that everybody goes, oh, good, Brian, let's do it. Right. So basically what we do is it can be summed up in four words. One is connect. So we literally connect individuals, but we also connect the silos, to go back to that word again. We connect those. We then, what we do is we convene, and that word's important because we didn't want just to have a membership organization. Those are good, but do they actually achieve anything? My view was no. My view was, or very little, my view was you've got to get people to talk to people. So we created this global network now of what we call ecosystems. Now, ecosystems, usually a word used in nature, because of the ecosystem, but it's the same principle with human beings. So we brought together under the one roof pharmaceutical companies, technology companies, software companies. We brought together innovative startups, universities, patient groups. And by bringing them together in one room, you tackle specific problems. So you cannot change the world by talking about, I want to change the world. We all do. But the reality is, how many people actually have an influence on changing at least something in the world? So by bringing these people together in an ecosystem, we started that process that every quarter they meet in their own regional area. They meet, they get to know each other. That's the first thing. Because in most cases, if you're a silo, you don't know anybody else outside the silo. So by bringing them together, they start to build up trust, respect, relationships, and then they start, believe it or not, to collaborate. And what happens then is by convening these meetings, we have about, I think it's about 300 meetings a year around the world. So that's the first element of our infrastructure, as I call it. But then what you do is that means we can, as an organization, coordinate that. We can then say, wait a minute, we will know, we want to ask the question of, I'll give you specific examples. We did a program recently on diabetes. So we found, who kept the best diabetes records over the last God knows how many years? They're all digitized now. So now we have records going back 20, 30, 40 years, digitized, therefore accessible. Then we brought together places like Scotland, which has got a great reputation, at Finland. We then went to Florida in the US. We went to Massachusetts in the US. We then went to Kigali in Africa. And then we went to Mumbai in India, because we know people there. They are our members. And we said, anybody's interested in diabetes, talk to us. They all talk to us. We then get them to tell us what they have done about particular aspects of diabetes, for example. We then collate that. We then disseminate that information. So by connecting the first place, you've got to do that first. Then you convene. Then what you do is you have a global perspective on particular diseases or systems. That's the infrastructure we put in place over the last. And then the last two words would be amplify. Many people have great ideas and many people have done fantastic things. However, it doesn't mean everyone knows they've done fantastic things. So we will amplify what they've done by taking their stories, putting it out on our social media, our LinkedIn channels, on our newsletters to 25,000, I think it is, people who have signed up. And we are able to do that globally. So that amplifies the message. And the last bit is accelerate. You, I'm sure, have come across startups and brilliant ideas, but the one thing that often stops them making it global is money. So they may have the best ideas in the world, the best entrepreneurs in the world, but they need money. So we then link them to venture capital, private equity, to all sorts of funding opportunities around the world. So by taking those four words of connect, convene, amplify, and accelerate, we're trying to offer that service globally.
That framework makes a lot of sense. I especially loved how you highlighted the need for funding. I think definitely a theme that I've seen throughout my experience on the podcast and more with also my own research experiences is that research is so dependent on funding, and sometimes the research that has the potential to do the most good, if it doesn't have the funding behind it, or if there isn't opportunity for profit, it's just much harder to get it off the ground. So I think the work that you're doing is fantastic, and also just being able to connect people with each other to increase the collective knowledge of research done in different fields is so important as well.
And it's fun most of the time. Most of the time it's fun.
And I'm just curious, how did you make the decision to start this organization? And was there any previous background that you had that helped you with this? And what did you have to teach yourself along the way? I'm sure there was a lot of improvisation and learning on the go.
That's the only way it works, it seems to me. Great plans can be written up, and anything goes beyond about 2 years is just fantasy. You just extrapolate for another couple of years. So my background is, I left school when I was 16. I'm very fortunate. I come from a very large family of six brothers, six sisters. And that's relevant because, my goodness, if you don't collaborate in that competitive environment, you don't really eat. So basically, I then have been very fortunate in my career where I have had 36 of my own startups. Some have failed. But again, from all mistakes, you learn. Failure is a great learning tool. As long as you learn and don't make the same ones again, people should also realize, though you may not make the same mistakes, you're going to continue to make mistakes, because you cannot make progress if you take no risk at all. So that led me into a career where I ended up being a corporate doctor, as they call it, where companies in trouble would call me in. And the bigger the company, the bigger the problem, the easier it was to look really good by applying a little bit of common sense. I then decided to do my own companies in Hong Kong, in New York, in London, and in Belfast and Dublin, in different industries. Then I live in a little island in the middle of the Irish Sea, which no one's ever heard of, called the Isle of Man. And it's got its own, it's an independent country, its own democracy, its own government for the last 1,000 years, actually. And basically, I came here when I've retired four times. I'm now in my fourth retirement. First retirement was 35, and then subsequently. My deal with my wife, long-suffering wife of 54 years, is that there's no point in me retiring, because if that ever happened, I'd have to spend all my time at home. And our agreement is I need to be away at least 50% of the time. So when I said, after my fourth retirement in the Isle of Man, having exited various things and felt, well, that's it, I've achieved everything. I had also learned, however, about the silo. And the way I've learned that is that I set up a healthcare company in the Isle of Man, built 40 nursing homes across the UK, sold that eventually. Then I started up another company, this time in Hong Kong, with nursing homes, primary care, et cetera, et cetera. And then in Ireland, I have we call it domiciliary care, a care at home company, about 2,000 employees at the moment. And basically, they're the ones that I learned from. And I realized the biggest obstacle to our growth, in most cases, was actually this collaborative point again, this silo mentality. So I decided to do something about it. And on the background of that experiences, I decided I was going to start the Connected Health Alliance. And that involved me in starting in Manchester, England, then Belfast, my home city, and then other places. And gradually, the idea took root. People began to realize that this may actually work. So over a period, I built a team. I got people to work for me for nothing, as I take nothing either, for a period of time. And eventually then we now have a highly professional team. They were always virtual in the sense, even before COVID, we've never had an office. We couldn't afford an office when we started. So we just worked from home. Then, of course, Zoom and Teams and so on came along. And now we are a fully functioning virtual team of about 35 people across the world. Who work for us, and then we have ambassadors and directors. And what we found was that if you have an idea, you have to actually think about it carefully. You then have to realize you've got to take small steps to get to the big goal. And now we've got, I think it's 80 ecosystems across the world, 300 meetings a year. We do global events, and all of this ties into our four words. And then we've started to get a reputation for doing as opposed to talking. We can talk as well. But, you know, you have to do things. You can't promise forever. You have to deliver. So I think that what happens is that people are beginning to realize in our membership that the idea of being able to have an infrastructure which allows you to actually speak to someone in another country about a problem you have is a very valuable commodity. To be able to, I mean, there's a friend of ours, one of our partners, Professor Ahendra Gupta, based in New Delhi and Mumbai, wrote the digital health strategy for the whole of India, for example, as an example, right? Become a great friend. He's a great partner. We automatically partner with him every year in his events. Why? Because we know the quality he brings about let's do things as opposed to let's talk about things is exactly our philosophy, and the same in Africa and the same in the States. So yeah, I really enjoy doing it. I'm supposed to spend a couple of days a week on it, but I actually probably spend certainly a lot of time every single day while I'm running my other businesses. So it's good fun.
That's incredible. Along with everything else you've done, it's so clear to me that you're incredibly passionate about this.
Yeah.
And I think the example that you gave is so effective in demonstrating that collaboration of different organizations increases economic opportunities and just generally being able to provide rather than just promise, as you said, and it facilitates other forms of growth, which I think goes back to your point about why it's so important to break down those silos and really focus on connection. And then you also mentioned the pandemic. And so your work has extended far before the pandemic, but how have you seen the COVID-19 pandemic kind of impacting the sector of digital health right now?
Well, two things I would say. One, it's very important to remember the number of people who died during that pandemic. Indeed, many people are still suffering from long COVID. It's easy to try to confine that to history. But the reality is we have to be really conscious of that, because that brings itself, to my mind at least, a duty for us to use the terrible part of the pandemic and look at the positives from it. So one of the positives which brought digital health to the fore, as you would know, is telehealth. Now, we work with the American Telemedicine Association. They're one of our members, and we partner with them all the time. They saw a huge spike in the number of people using telehealth, etc. And they saw a huge number of additional APIs being put on top of the platforms of telemedicine. That spike during the COVID, the only way to communicate was this way. The great advantage of that was to make sure that we learned from that, but we also needed to make sure that there needed to be a legacy after COVID. That legacy had to be to say, well, all the lessons we learned, and I'll give you an example in just 1 second, about how this impacted people. One of the lessons we learned was you've got to learn the good things out of COVID pandemic, and you've got to make them continue. Because when you look at the graphs of how many people use telemedicine during COVID, and then afterwards you saw that dipping. Now, it has not returned to the level before COVID. It's still at a higher level. Why is that? Because we learn to use telehealth and telemedicine differently. In the past, it's been promoted as an opportunity to talk to your doctor virtually or that sort of thing. It's now much more a tool for caring for you at home and managing your care at home virtually. Quick example. There's one of our best ecosystems is up in Scotland. And a pharmaceutical company came to them and said, all these islands you've got off the coast of Scotland, you've got the Outer Hebrides, you've got all of these wonderful, I've been to many of them, they're wonderful places. Though make sure you take a raincoat, it's usually raining. But the key there was it's difficult for people from those islands to get to Glasgow or Edinburgh, where the seats of medicine, medical knowledge are. So you say, well, why are you bothering? So for example, colon cancer, big problem. This company had invented a capsule which you take in real time. It has a camera inside it, takes its way through the body, right, and takes photographs and gives you a glimpse inside the colon. It also is less invasive than the normal way to do colonoscopies. So what happens now is that we helped connect that company to the authorities in the islands, the highlands and islands as they're called. That then enabled people in each of those islands who were thought maybe to have a problem with the colon to take this capsule. That capsule in real time was then watched by a surgeon in Glasgow, for example, and he would say, you're fine, you don't need to come all the way to Glasgow. Or he might say, well, there's 3% of you do need to come and see me. But think of this, just the sheer weight lifted off your mind if you can get something done as quickly as that. Secondly, the amount you save in terms of time and economic benefit of not having to travel. And third, the ability, therefore, to diagnose those people who are at highest risk and take more in-depth investigation. That's just one example of where we connected the supplier of the tablets to the infrastructure inside the NHS and some other supporting local companies who could work with software and so on, and nurses and so on. And suddenly what you had was a collaboration in action. So that's an example of where, that's where I get really excited and pleased about, because you're really helping patients first and foremost to get better care more quickly. And you're also helping industry to grow and get a market. That's why I keep doing what I do with the Alliance.
Yeah, especially I think considering like travel and for some patients who may be gravely impacted by their condition, may not even have the capacity to travel. And even for patients that can, it can be very expensive, very costly. And especially if you need to connect to a certain specialist, which it's not available near you, it can be incredibly useful. So yeah, I think we've always kind of talked about the collaborative power of telemedicine, but even just thinking about the benefit that it has for the patient specifically in terms of efficiency is really important to highlight. And there was definitely a big learning curve for physicians as we really dove into telemedicine out of necessity in the pandemic. But coming out of it now, it's not as much of a need, but because we've kind of become accustomed to it and we've learned what's effective and what's not, patients are able to get so much better care, and the accessibility is just greatly improved. So,
and I think I take your point completely. And what's really interesting about the maintainability of telehealth is telehealth has had to change itself. It's had to become a real tool, not just a nice to have, but a real element in any care package. And that's true in around the world. I mean, countries like Africa, for example. I was in Kigali in Rwanda recently, and I visited a village there, which is the most amazing thing. I'll tell you as quickly as I can about it. You go to this village, it's 3 hours, 4 hours from the nearest doctor. Okay, that village now has mobile phone technology, because that was part of the agreement with anybody who wants to be do the mobile phones in Rwanda has to agree that the trickle-down electricity from the mobile phone mast it doesn't go into the ground anymore. It goes into power, first of all, a fridge, which is donated by the Bill Gates Foundation, right?
Wow.
It then powers the iPad, which becomes the clinic in the center of the village. It then allows pregnant women in particular, to give you an example, to be able to, instead of walking 3 or 4 hours to see a doctor and walk 3 or 4 hours back, and then you find the number of miscarriages, of course, shoot up. What they're able to do now is to go to that kiosk with the iPad, see the doctor, take measurements, blood pressure, and various other things. And now, by the way, ultrasound as well, right? And what that feeds in, the doctor says, you don't need to come and see me. But I tell you what, I need to change those drugs. I'll send them to you. What do? They send it by either motorcycle, car, or drones. So the drone literally goes to the village, drops the pharmaceuticals by parachute. The village chief picks it up, puts it in the fridge, and every morning gives out the medication. Now, if that is not joined up collaboration, I don't know what is. Now, if you take that technology of the drones, for example, that is now, the company in Rwanda who do that are now actually running the drones between, go back to the Outer Hebrides and Shetland and Orkney. They're now sending drones and delivering that. They're doing the same in London and throughout the world. So what we've learned about collaboration is that you've got to maintain it, strengthen it, and expand it. And that's what COVID taught us. And it's in our, we have a responsibility not to ignore all the people who died and ignore all the messages we all learned about that, but to use that knowledge to actually make sure that we look after people better in the future and are ready for future pandemics as well.
Absolutely. And it's crazy to think about how we are truly living in the future. I mean, 2020 was 4 years ago. It doesn't feel like it, but it was. I just remember there being so many projected statistics as people were hypothesizing where COVID could go. And 2024 seems so far away, yet it's here right now. And things like dropping off medication with drones and regularly having telemedicine as an option for patients were things that 10 years ago, I remember hearing about it in articles and journals, like think pieces, but it's so much closer than it actually seemed at the time, or even artificial intelligence, all of these different aspects of digital health. So yeah.
It's amazing. I think, and we have to capture it. We have to not never stop, basically, is my approach. Yeah,
truly is. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It was wonderful to hear about your experiences and the role of collaboration in digital health and how technology is kind of joining us together more than ever before. So yeah, we loved having you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure and good luck. Thanks very much indeed.